Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. And we talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And today on the Donalana Kitchen, we have all noticed that the weather is changing a bit. It's very fallish out. So there's a pumpkin spice alert, of course, because those
pumpkin spice everything.
Oh, yeah. There we go. And it's sweater weather. I hope you all know where you put your sweaters and mittens away because I think we will need them. Wow. It's that season, and that's why we live in the Midwest, I think, to watch them come and go. Today on the Donalana Kitchen, we're going to talk about popcorn and nut brittles and recipes for trick-or-treat.
This is our Halloween show here.
It is, and we have a book review, too. So we are glad that you joined us today, joined us on the Donalana Kitchen. So talk about Halloween, Donna.
Well, traditionally, I suppose in a very English kind of way, our pagan way, right? They would say that the end of October and the 1st of November it's the time of the year when the veils between the worlds are thinnest. That's why all the ghosts come back and forth.
Okay.
And the goblins, and you know, you can slip from this world into the next world more easily, or at least you can see into it, apparently.
Okay.
So, for me, it's like, okay, here we go. We're on the slide into the new year. So it's Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. There you go. Boom, 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 boom.
Plus all the other end of the year celebrations.
Black Friday.
Black Friday and
Solstice
Hanukkah.
And actually it's Diwali now.
Yes.
Which is the Indian version of Christmas, kind of.
Well, and that's a nice thing. Although I'm not much for fireworks myself, it's a joy to watch everybody bouncing around being colorful.
Well, it's a festival of lights, which is sort of like, isn't there a Scandinavian one that's the, where the girls walk around with candles on their heads? And
Santa Lucia.
There. So, you know, these are all festivals globally in the northern hemisphere of the receding of the light. And, of course, in the southern hemisphere, where they're all upside down from us, it's the coming of the light. So we are moving into the shortest day of the year.
Yeah. It's kind of reassuring. It comes around every year, and you think, oh, we're all modern now. We don't do things that worry about veils and spirits and ghosts, but everybody kind of gets into the spirit this time of year anyway. And dealing with the loss of daylight, I mean,
and the change in temperature, that definitely affects all of us. And then, you know, you see all the leaves falling down, and, you know, it's...
Yes.
You can't avoid this.
Yep. And try as we might. I mean, maybe hundreds and hundreds of years ago, we'd be having bonfires and doing incantations to the spirit, but in our time of...
Yeah, you just get on the next plane to Florida, right?
Yeah, right. We deal with it differently. Also, we deal with it differently by trying to invent this thing called daylight savings time.
Oh. Yeah.
And that has been... strange. Actually, I hear that we are not going to do that anymore, but I'm not quite sure when we're going to stop.
Well, I would be very happy when it stops. You know, it reminds me, years ago, I had a friend, she was Swedish or something, but we lived in California, and she did this thing where she never used, she went to bed when the sun went down, and she got up when the sun got up, and didn't, like... turn lights on. And she lived that way for several years. She just wanted to put herself more in tune with it. Isn't it called the diurnal rhythms? Isn't that the daylight, darkness?
Yeah, I think so.
And our our own internal rhythms, our circadian rhythms or something. Anyway, she was synchronizing the two as humans have done for thousands and thousands of years. And I always thought, oh, that sounds like such a nice idea. I'll do it. Not, have never done it, but, you know, I like the concept anyway.
It's a good concept.
Yeah.
Well, Donna, let's talk about popcorn. Well, that's a good Halloween thing.
Yes, the Halloween thing sort of, you know, Lana and I are, we're a little bah humbug about running out and buying all of this junk candy in little packages for the adorable children who show up if you turn your porch light on. And, you know, when we were younger, before everybody was totally paranoid that people were putting razor blades in apples and trying to poison children or something, people used to have homemade treats for Halloween. And that was, you know, a lot of fun, for one thing. It was fun to make something that you were giving to usually your neighbor's children whom you all knew. You know, and there was a lot more personalized giving and effort involved rather than just, you know, running down to Walmart and buying these bags and bags of candy. I know the children don't care. They're happy to have all of this junk. I can remember when my grandson was living with me, I was so appalled at the amount of garbage that he was eating that we worked out a deal. You know, he could pick out a certain amount of it and then I would give him money to get rid of the rest of it, right?
Oh, goodness.
In fact, there is a dentist on 13th and Duff. He used to put a sign out that he would buy all the candy back from the children.
Huh.
Well, I think he was alarmed at what it does to their teeth, and rightly so. But
I wonder what he did with it all. I probably compost.
It is a waste, but, you know, maybe it's a preventative waste. It's better than wasting your teeth enamel or something like that. So Lana and I are talking about things that we want to encourage you to make small bags of and either give it to your friends or the people that you know. Or, you know, I've tried this a few years. When the people come to the house, they usually have their parents with them. And if I want to give out a real homemade treat, I carefully explain what it is and what's in it, you know, in case there's peanut allergies or this or that or something, you know. And then if the parent doesn't want the homemade thing, then you can give them a nickel or something, you know. But this was, you know, we were just thinking, oh, what if we made some homemade treats again? So, of course, popcorn is an excellent one in those brown paper sandwich bags or something like that. So we're talking about popcorn today, and not, mind you, the microwavable popcorn. As we have noted in past shows, what's the chemical? The PUFAs, PFAS?
PFAs.
PFAS? Whatever. That new chemical that they have discovered is used on firefighters' things, and now it's in the Ames water system, and apparently it's ubiquitous everywhere, and it's not a good thing. It also is in the liners of some brands, and maybe all, but I don't know, but at least some brands of the microwave popcorn. So be warned. Lana and I, of course, are not microwave fans, and we use hot air poppers, which I love.
That is one of the better inventions,
I think. It's so much easier than like shaking the pan over the stove and all of that sort of thing. And if you really want to have a wild time, you spread a big sheet out on the floor with an extension cord. You plug in the hot air popper in the middle of it. You take the lid off and you let it pop all over the place and the kids have a ball.
Well, I bet, and the dog would have a ball too.
I don't know. The dog might be frightened by the whole thing, but
well, if there's food involved, mine would be ready.
Oh,
there.
Right.
No
problem. Carla would love it. Okay, anyway.
Popcorn.
So, starting with a hot air popped popcorn. My favorite recipe that is very popular, of course, involves a lot of butter. So I melt the butter, and I do mix some olive oil in too. And then I take pureed garlic. So not, you don't want chunks. You really want it very smooth. You know, really a garlic paste, and you lightly brown it. Don't burn it. You just get it nice and warm and diffused through all the oil.
Oh, and you then, put that in the butter and olive oil.
Yeah, in the butter and olive oil, because you know, raw garlic is a little bit much on popcorn. But, you know, think of like how everyone loves garlic bread. They love garlic popcorn. And then I put a little curry into it also. But, you know, you can use any kind of savory spice with that. And actually, Lana and I were going to direct you to the site of Salt Lickers, which is an Ames company of salted flavorings. So just Google Salt Lickers because they have all kinds of flavors that are wonderful on popcorn. Now, if you're really, you know, if you're really counting the calories and stuff, you can't just put the Salt Licker seasonings straight onto the popcorn. But, you know, if you put all the seasonings in the butter, including the garlic, you can't really make garlic popcorn with, well, I suppose you could use garlic powder.
Yeah, probably.
Probably. But, you know, if I'm going to eat popcorn, I'm going to go for the butter. This is not the kind of, you know, the stuff they use in the theater, at the movie theater for popcorn is not butter, folks.
No, I can't believe it's not butter.
Yeah, right. It's not butter. So the homemade stuff, we love it, and it's very popular at parties, and really simple to make.
Yeah, popcorn with garlic and curry, it's good. It's good. I don't know, maybe the kids would like that, but the salt lickers or other seasoned salt kind of flavors are just try something else.
Well, on her salt lickers page, she does have a recipe for what does she call it? Hers is written for microwave toffee popcorn with Coco Corazon. Now, I've tasted that as a sample, and it's really, really good
because
it has a little chocolate in it. So this is not a savory one. It's a sweet one, and she does it sort of like, well, she's got the recipe on the website, so you just Google salt lickers, and then you'll see microwave toffee popcorn with Coco Corazon. But you know, you pop the corn however you want to pop it. And then she combines her Coco Corazon, which is a mix that she makes, with butter and corn syrup. Then she microwaves it, but you could easily heat it in a saucepan. Now, the corn syrup and the butter, when they get hot with the sugar from the Coco Corazon, don't burn yourself. That's all I can say.
Volatile, I think.
This is not something you want your 5-year-old to do, okay? So you mix those things up, and then you stir in a little baking soda at the very end after it's bubbling. Then you pour it over the popcorn. It's pretty simple. Or you can do it her microwave method. It's kind of caramel corny. You do caramel corn, right?
Yes. I have a recipe I've been using for years from my godmother, whose name was Aunt Tiny, and she was a great person. So she always cooked interesting things. This is her recipe for oven caramel corn. You need a large baking pan. A big turkey roaster works really well. Set the oven at 250 degrees Fahrenheit. Butter the sides of the pan. And make enough popcorn to fill a roasting pan 3/4 full. That is 3 of my air poppers, but whatever.
Yeah,
some make a big pan of it. And then this is similar to what Donna did here. In a saucepan combined, 1/2 cup dark caro syrup I've used Mrs. Butterworth said fake syrup, or considering I have access to it, maple syrup works really nice for this.
Oh, I was wondering about that because most of the, like we're going to talk later about making nut brittles, mm-hmm. and they all use corn syrup. Mm-hmm.
The maple syrup works lovely, and if you happen to know a maple syrup maker, like I sort of know a maple syrup, sometimes there's the syrup that is extra dark. Some folks don't like that. Grab it up, folks, and cook with it. The maple syrup.
Oh, yeah, nice. And the maple syrup that's made out at Lana's house is done over an open fire, so it has slightly smoky flavor. Really extraordinary.
I do like this. So, okay, that's 1/2 cup of syrup of some sort, 2 cups brown sugar, 1 cup butter, 1 teaspoon salt. Boil that for a while, low over moderate heat on top of the stove, and this is like Donna just said, you add 1/2 teaspoon of baking soda and you beat at the very end, beat until foamy. That's it's kind of Halloweenish.
It kind of bubbles up.
It's Halloweenish. It's very which is cauldron-ish. And then immediately work fast.
Yeah, because and the second it starts to cool, it
mix
is
it in
sticky.
The steam pan. Mix it, yeah. mix it. A buttered spoon works well because it's sticky.
Or a silicone spatula.
Spatula. And then you bake it in the oven at 250 degrees. Helps kind of dry it out. And stir it every 15 minutes. And then take it out of the oven and spread it on wax paper and cool it and store in an airtight container. It lasts really well, except you're going to eat it. I mean, you can make it like for a while, and it'll last for a while unless you eat it all. Anyway, this oven caramel corn recipe is on the Donna Lana Kitchen website. You can go to www.khoifm.org, go to talk shows, find the Donna Lana show thing there, and give it a poke, and you'll find, among other things,
this is still from the Coco Corazon popcorn. She says her descriptions are good. She's a writer. She's pour half the toffee over the popcorn in each bowl and stir to blend in. She says, I use two spatulas. It feels like I'm conducting a chocolate orchestra. She said, spread the popcorn out on the wax paper to cool. If you let it cool in the bowls, it will be a big rock.
Yes,
so it's
yes.
True, you gotta keep it moving, and also when it's in the oven, you gotta, because as soon as it starts to cool, it like seizes up.
It does. But the oven for an hour does dry it out, and if you fluff it up enough, it's great. So, oven caramel corn from my Aunt Tiny Wested. That's her recipe. Yes, it is. So have you ever wondered what makes popcorn pop?
Yeah, and the corn that we use for popcorn is not the same kind of corn that you see growing in all the fields in Iowa. It's a special variety.
Whole different type. There's four common types of corn. Sweet corn, dent corn that has, it's a field corn with a little dent in its seed. Flint corn, the field corn too, hard. And popcorn, which is a little rounder seed. Popcorn differs from the other type of corn in that its hull has just the right thickness to allow it to eventually burst open. For centuries, people have been fascinated by popcorn, and people in the olden days believed a spirit lived inside of the kernel, which makes sense
to
me.
Yes, and it's come through right now because the veils are thin.
So when heated, the spirit grows angry and bursts out of its home. Now, that makes a lot of sense, but there is a less charming but more scientific explanation, okay? Each kernel of popcorn contains a small drop of water stored inside a circle of soft starch. Popcorn needs between 13.5 and 14% moisture to pop. Otherwise, it can't get through that surface. And I don't know, did your mom do this? Mom always stored her popcorn kernels in a jar in the refrigerator, because she said it had to be a little moist. You couldn't.
Oh.
So anyway, I remember, I don't do that for mine.
I don't either.
Does have to be moist.
Yeah.
So if something isn't popping, that's maybe why. As each kernel heats up, the water expands. Around 212 degrees, the water turns to steam and changes the starch inside of each kernel to a superheated gelatinous substance. The kernel continues to heat to about 347 degrees, and then, get this, the pressure inside the grain will reach 135 pounds per square inch before finally bursting open. This sounds awfully dangerous. Okay. A single kernel can swell up to 40 to 50% times its original size. Yeah. So,
yum.
So either you follow this scientific explanation or just think of the spirit inside the popcorn, ready to get out. Yes, very good. Now, you talked about Halloween candy, Donna, and I'm not against Halloween candy. And I'm one of those people that this time of year...
I'm not against it, I just don't want to eat it.
This time of year, Donna, I have been known to enjoy candy corn. And I am of the minor... I hear that nobody likes the candy corn, the little triangular things. And I'm not going to eat a whole bag of it.
Well, they're cute.
But they're cute, and they're overly sweet, and they make your teeth hurt. And in the spirit of the season, I like candy corn. And no, candy corn, you can be, even if it says corn, you cannot consider it a vegetable. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Now, that's what... Also, I've noticed that there, of course... on the internet, you can find all sorts of polls and studies, and people research these things. People were researching favorite Halloween candies, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Looked up Iowa. Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are evidently the biggest seller here for Halloween. Who would have thought?
Well, I occasionally eat one of those.
Here we go. And Reese's, not bad. So we can, get your trick-or-treats there.
Well, you can rationalize it. Okay, it has some nutritive value because it has peanut butter, and, of course, chocolate has antioxidants. But, the fake corn has probably nothing of any redeeming nutritive value in it.
Probably not.
It's probably just cute.
It's cute and sweet. Oh, it's probably a high fructose corn syrup, right?
At this point, probably. I mean, it's an old style of candy. Obviously, we had this when we were growing up. It's charming.
Yeah. So there is trick or treats coming, and think about that. Think about that. Also, I want to mention another recipe here from my Aunt Tiny. Aunt Tiny's dirt cake, which kind of has a Halloween element to it, because Aunt Tiny had a way of making our Wisconsin family gatherings fun. She always had a joke or a smile or something going, and this is kind of a joke cake, but of course we ate it. This gooey dessert is assembled in a flower pot. You serve it with a garden trowel and a smile. Mix together. Oh, you put a little bit of
foil in the hole.
Foil in the hole. Okay. 1/4 cup softened margarine, 8 ounces softened cream cheese, 3/4 cup powdered sugar. Combine those things and add 12 ounces of Cool Whip, 3 cups milk, and 2 packages of French vanilla instant pudding. Mix that all together, huh? Okay. Then, set that aside. Take 1 large package of Oreo cookies, crush most of them with the centers left in, and save out 4 or 5 cookies unscrewed. So you just have the
tops.
That's the dirt for the top. And then you layer the pudding mixture with the crushed Oreos in a clean 8-inch flower pot. Clean is the word here. Clean 8-inch flower pot. Put a bit of plastic wrap over the hole in the bottom first. Then, here comes the fun part. In each layer, add a few gummy worms. And you kind of add that up. And so when you serve this, everybody not only gets a scoop of dirt, but some gummy worms too. And then the Oreo crumbs go on top to make the dirt. And then you let it set up in the refrigerator for a few hours. And then to serve, stick a few colorful plastic flowers into the pot and add a few more gummy worms on the top. There you go. That's a good Halloween dessert, don't you think?
It is a good trick. I tell you, one time for Organic Farming Research Foundation, when we used to do those big lunches, for 300 people in the organic industry, we did a version of that. It was all organic. We used the Numinos cookies.
Of course.
And, of course, we made like a chocolate pudding and put a lot of the crushed cookies into it. Then we served it in, it was part of the table decoration, so everybody had their dessert in front of their, seating position, and we served it in little flower pots, and we put a fresh mint sprig in the whole thing. And right, so of course, by the time it got out to the table, some of the mint sprigs were starting to wilt, and I saw, this is a, I'm going to name a name. So George Seaman, who was president of CEO of and founder of Organic Valley, was sitting. Somebody saw him pouring water into it because he was worried about the. he didn't realize it was not, that it was edible, and he was watering the mint on the table. So.
It's always something. So this is not only Halloween.
It's a good trick.
It's
a trick part of the treat.
Trick or treat is the season, and have some fun with your food. Yes.
Just make it taste good. Made it taste really good.
Yeah. So Aunt Tiny's dirt cake is also on the Donald on the Kitchen recipe page. We aim to please. Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. This is KHOI. And this is the Donald on the Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donnell in the Kitchen. That was the Barn Owl Band playing a good old fiddle tune called, believe it or not, Popcorn. Yes, it was. I saw that in the lineup, and I thought, well, wait a minute. We can use that for this show, so that's good. Nice to have a tune that's apropos of the show. Well, we're talking about popcorn and stuff for Halloween, and I want to have a little news item here. Tick-a-tick, tick-a-tick, tick-a-tick. That's the Donnell in the Kitchen ticker tape. And hot off the presses here, got this in the local paper. There is a new popcorn shop. And you go in and buy some in Nevada, Iowa, called the Bricktown Popcorn Shop, downtown Nevada. And evidently it's the only popcorn shop in the county. So Mike and Paula Feltner decided to open a gourmet popcorn shop on Main Street.
Gourmet must mean they have a lot of flavors.
Oh, yeah. They do a lot of good flavors. And they have a bakery next door. So what's not to like? You can go in to head to the bakery and then go get some popcorn. They have lots of there's all kinds of caramel apple things and pumpkin spice,
of
course.
Oh, yeah. This time of year, I suppose they have pumpkin spice popcorn.
They do.
Oh, boy.
And they have cheese-coated flavors, and they do specialty things like the Harry Potter-themed Hocus Pocus blend. Huh. So check that out. Anyway, that's in Nevada.
That's true. And the cheese-flavored, we didn't talk about the savory popcorn.
That cheese flavor's a good idea. And of course, they do things for fundraisers like Size blend and Herky's blend and a blend for the Nevada Cubs. You can do that. And anyway.
Time for a road trip to Nevada.
It is. And that's a good thing. So just in time for Halloween, a nice thing added to the local economy here. No, what could be better than popcorn? Good. Oh, a note here I wanted to mention. I thought this was kind of amazing that I can't find it. But how much popcorn people eat? It's like, it's a lot.
More than one would imagine, right?
More than one would imagine.
Well,
it
is kind of an every man's food or every woman's food.
All children.
And it can be relatively healthy. Of course, if you put lots of butter like I like on it, you know, Here it is.
I found it. 14 billion quarts of popcorn each year in America. So you can
14
imagine.
Billion quarts.
Yeah.
Oh, that's one of those numbers that's too big for my brain there.
I know. Yeah. That's about 43 quarts per person.
Per year. Oh, I'm not keeping up my part of the deal, I guess.
I'm not either.
Well, eat more popcorn.
Let's move away from popcorn. I'm getting hungry. Move on to something else.
Okay. All right. How about nut brittle?
I like that.
That's another thing that I think is really lots of fun to make and hand out in little bags for, even if you're just giving it to your friends. It's kind of a creative thing you can do for Halloween. That's, you know, it's a candy and it's really easy to make. Although it's very dangerous to make. You know, that hot butter and sugar, you got to be careful.
And heaven knows we have had our interesting kitchen moments with hot things.
Yes. Well, you know, for years, my mom and my niece Stephanie brought this recipe into the family for peanut brittle, and we made it for a long, long time. And then I realized, of course, I didn't have to put peanuts in it. You could do all kinds of other things with. So I just pulled up because I couldn't find my index card that had Stephanie's recipe on it. Who knows where I've put it at this point? So I just went on. I sort of remembered it, but it's something you need to you have to measure for this one, right? So I found one on allrecipes.com that I used last night, and it's, as far as I can remember, it's exactly what we used to make. But I flavored it. So, Lana, I want you to taste my black walnut peanut brittle. Crunch that right into the microphone there. It's yum, yum, yum.
Oh. I like peanut brittle, but I really like black walnuts. So
I know.
This is good.
This is the Iowa version. And, of course, I added a little bit of cinnamon, a little bit of cardamom, and the third one, coriander. And you put that in. You put the dry ingredients in early in the recipe, and then you add the nuts later. And it also has some cocoa nibs, because I find that that the cocoa, I mean, it's not that sweet. Mm-mm. But it's just that little, oh, and some black pepper too, of course.
Are you remembering everything now?
Of course.
But yeah.
So here's how you make a nut brittle. And you can put, you know, you could use macadamias, you could put pecans, you could use regular walnuts, almonds, any old. In fact, I was thinking, I bet a pine nut recipe of nut brittle would be really good. Sounds very Italian, doesn't it?
Oh my.
I mean, you know, any kind of nut, eat cashews. Coconut can go in it too. but the trick is, it goes very fast once you start it, right? So you need to have everything measured out in advance, right? So you've got this hot pan full of bubbling, you know, oil and sugar, and you have to be really careful and very attentive. So the things, you just pour them in, bing, bang, bong. So, this recipe is 1 cup of white sugar, 1/2 cup of light corn syrup, and 1/4 cup of water. So you mix those all in a, I like to use my cast iron for that. Now the problem with the cast iron is, of course, it's dark, so it's hard to see because you're watching for the color change. But you put those three ingredients in, and then I added it with those ingredients is when I added the dry herbs. Or spices. So mm-hmm. I put in the pepper, the coriander, the black pepper, the cardamom, and cinnamon. I put that all right in at the beginning. So, okay. So the flavor was, you know, melting in with the sugar. And then you have to stir it, and a silicone spatula is really, really helpful. Now they, in the all recipes, they use a candy thermometer and give you the degrees to use. I'm a little old fashioned and I do it by the color of the, so you're stirring it. let's see, what did they say? Until the candy thermometer reaches 300 to 310. I just keep stirring it. It takes a little longer than you think, and it also depends on how hot your fire is. But I, you know, I make sure I hold a little on the spatula so I can see the color because you're waiting for it to darken. Uh-huh. Not too dark. You don't want to burn it, but you do want it to begin to get that kind of, you know, nice color of peanut brittle. So when it reaches that color, and it's kind of bubbling and it's very hot and you must be extremely careful because, I mean, you can get a serious burn from melted sugar. And now you also put, if your nuts are salted, you don't put salt in, or if, otherwise, or if your butter is salted, because at the end you put butter in, otherwise you can put the salt in at the very beginning also. So once it reaches that color, which is kind of a golden color, then you dump in 1 cup of your nuts. So in this instance, I put 1 cup of black walnut pieces, and then I also added in, I think I put in maybe 1/3 cup of cocoa nibs. And you stir that in rather quickly, and then when it's kind of all coated, all the nuts are coated, then you put in 2 tablespoons of butter that had already been softened. Ah. So it melts really quickly, and then you stir in, this is the volcanic part, 1 teaspoon of baking soda. And then it kind of bubbles and fizzes, and you mix it, and it kind of all gets a little lighter. And then as soon as it's all combined, then you pour it into the prepared baking sheet. Now, the baking sheet either has to be buttered, or it has to have, I use, of course, my Silpat, my silicone baking sheet, because that really helps, because this stuff is sticky and it's hot, and then you kind of spread it a little bit with your spatulas as much, but it won't move too much. So you got to work really fast because as soon as you pour it and take it off the heat, it starts to cool and it gets, turns brittle rather quickly. Now do not try to taste it at that point. You've got to let it cool. And it's a sticky, it's a hot mess for a little while, as they say.
It's magic. And also, Also, be careful that you have a big enough pan. This works for the caramel corn, too, on top of the stove, that when you add baking soda,
right, because
it's going to boil up.
Fluffles up a lot there.
Consider it.
It almost changes volume. So, yeah.
Almost double. I mean, because it gets really poofy and you go, oh, my goodness. But that's what it's supposed to do. Just make sure your pan is big enough to deal with that. Oh, my, this could really make a mess, Donna.
Yeah, and it's kind of like I hadn't probably made it for 5 or more years, yeah. And I'm kind of going, oh, dear, oh, dear. It's a little bit intimidating because of the heat and the dangers inherent in it, you know. But, of course, once you do it, it's actually really quick and simple. And for older children, make them watch you a few times before they try it. But it is a bit of a chemistry experiment.
It is.
You know,
it's
with
the perfect kind of thing to put your witch's hat on and go for it.
And the results afterwards are, you know, I mean, I try to give it away as quickly as possible because obviously I'll just sit there and eat it and eat it and eat it. And there's so many, you know, custom flavors. You can make it taste any way you want.
Yes, yes. Oh, I want to thank my neighbor Diane. Always gives me almond brittle for Christmas.
Almond brittle. Almond. Mm-hmm.
And now she says, oh, I don't bake, but I make this. So she makes this, and I look forward to it every year. And she puts a thin, thin layer of chocolate on the top of it.
Oh, yes. Once it cools.
Once it cools.
Yeah, okay. It has to cool. Once it's cool and set, then it's all in a, you know, it's in a kind of a big sheet-like mm-hmm. thing. And eventually you're going to break that, but before you break it, you can melt some, like, chocolate chips or you know, they sell special chocolate that's melt for candy making. And so you could do milk chocolate or you could do bitter chocolate. I was actually thinking because black walnuts are really, really good with chocolate, which is why I put the cocoa nibs in. But that would be a fun to make, you know, kind of, you don't cover the whole thing in chocolate. You just kind of dribble it all over it. And then when it all sets up, the fun part is, you got to crack the whole thing. So you either, you know, hit it with a big spoon or, you know, because you want to break it into pieces and things like that. So it is a fun project.
Very good. Nut brittles for Halloween or any time.
Christmas. They're great Christmas presents, too.
The holidays are coming up. Think of that.
And you can store it, but you do want to put it in an airtight container because it is a little susceptible to moisture. Not that we've had that much moisture lately, but...
Tis. Mm-hmm. Well, I have another quick news item here. From the Donna Lana Kitchen News Department. Every year I'm always amazed at this. And we're talking pumpkins this time of year, folks. We're talking the kind of folks that
the frost is on the pumpkin.
And this one is. And this is the huge pumpkin contest. There's a place in California called Half Moon Bay, California, that has a big pumpkin contest. And this guy from Minnesota named Travis Geiner of Anoka, Minnesota, set the new world's record this year, and he trekked this big pumpkin out to California to where it get this folks.
Okay, he grew it in Minnesota, and then he had to carry it to California?
Yeah.
On a semi-truck, I suppose.
Okay, listen to this, folks. It weighs 2,560 pounds, and yes, there's a picture of this pumpkin. It's just this huge pile of pumpkinness. It's like it comes up to this guy's waist, and that's it laying on its side. So there it is, and
obviously not edible.
Well, maybe one thing I know about these contests is that the people get involved in this, they obsess. I mean, and why am I not surprised it's a lot of guys that do this? And, you know, because not only do you grow this pumpkin, we got to get the forklift out to pick it up. We got to wrap it up and hoist it.
Yeah, you got
to
weigh it.
And talk about how you do it and you put up grow lights. And, oh, anyway, people spend their lives doing this. And he took that thing to California, and it was the biggest.
And he won.
He's won in the past.
Now he's famous.
But it is not the biggest, because in Italy they also have this contest. In Italy. I bet
the Italians are growing bigger pumpkins than the Midwesterners.
They are, because the world's heaviest pumpkin was grown in Italy in 2021.
According
to the Guinness World Book Records, 2,702 pounds.
Okay. Well, there's always next year, you know, we could take it back again.
Yep. And think of this, folks. This is a gardening thing, of course. Those pumpkins have seeds. And boy, they, I'm sure on the market, boy, those seeds are worth a lot of money.
Oh, the value of the world's largest pumpkin seeds.
Oh, because they might be just, you know, like...
One of these, like Jack and the Giant Beanstalk or something?
It is. Okay. It is. Whew. Another thought for Halloween, the giant pumpkin. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more at www.khoifm.org. Welcome back. We're talking good things for Halloween. And like Donna says, the time when the...
veils are thinnest between the worlds.
And we're human beings. We react to that. We have ways of dealing with it. How we deal with things that go bump in the night, perhaps. For centuries... people have gathered and celebrated and reveled, and I've got a bit of a book review here by author Barbara Ehrenreich. Barbara Ehrenreich is no longer with us, unfortunately.
Just recently passed, yeah.
Yeah, recently. And but this is from a past Donna Lana Kitchen, and I thought I'd pull it out because it has something to do with community and mortality and being silly.
And celebrations.
And celebration. That, actually, I read it a long time ago, but I pulled it out and read it again because it's got the word dancing in it and the title, and I've always perk up with that. The book is by Barbara Ehrenreich, and the book is Dancing in the Streets, A History of Collective Joy.
And she is a sociologist, and she happens to be a good writer.
This is actually an anthropological history of people celebrating throughout the centuries. It kind of goes in cycles. There is this human need to, well, celebrate the harvest and all that
community
sort of thing.
Gatherings.
Community
yep.
gathering.
Yep.
And what's interesting is there's also a very strong need, has been with us for a long time, for a little bit of play and monkey business. And there's a lot of dancing and a lot of stuff masking and actually...
and probably eating together.
Oh, eating, yes. But role reversal, she talks about that. Even as far back as the Greeks and the Middle Ages and into the Renaissance, there was at least one day a year when people would switch roles. Perhaps the serf would sit on the throne and the lord of the manor would be asked to shovel some dirt. I mean, and back and forth. And you'd have role reversals, and just for one day, and men and women. Men would dress as women would dress as men, and all the jokes that go on. All that sort of thing has been going on for a long time.
So it's sort of like walking in another person's shoes.
It is. Yes. It is.
Yes.
And just the idea of dancing in the street, the collective joy. It's interesting how she follows that through the centuries, because, of course, people tend to do that. And sure, can be predicted. The powers that be spend their time quashing that sort of thing. Oh, we can't dance in the streets. That's a sin.
I guess we're just reduced to marching in the streets.
Marching in the streets. Yeah, I don't. Anyway, up and down. And here we are in the start of the 21st century. It seems there's a lot of masking and fun-taking and satire that needs to be done. Let's dress up as your fears, dress up as what your hopes and dreams, and kind of play with that for a day. And the collective dancing in the street, including, of course, feasting, that's extremely important for the health of any community, I would think.
I would say one of the lovely things about our community here in Central Iowa is that we have a lot of public events for gathering and playing and, you know, eating together and dancing together and parading together.
Right. Together is the important thing. Ah, this is community radio. That's a together sort
yep,
of thing.
Yep. We do a lot of that here.
It is. That playing is just as important as working. And we may tend to forget that. Halloween is a good time. We talk about pranks and doing things. Pranks, yes, you still can be kind. You still don't have to hurt anybody.
You can be silly.
You can be silly. Turn things on their head. It is awfully good for your psyche.
Go out and knock over those outhouses.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Good luck on finding an outhouse. Oh, goodness. So this is the book called Dancing in the Streets, A History of Collective Joy by Barbara Ehrenreich. Barbara Ehrenreich is the author of 14 books, well, actually probably more by now, and she wrote Nickel and Dimed and Bait and Switch. Those were also good anthropological studies of how we do things.
She's good with the social commentary.
Good.
It's well worth reading.
Right. So Dancing in the Streets. And we can do that. We can have a happy Halloween when you... Well, a good book. It's nice to remember that book again. Yes, it is. A little bit of frivolity. I must mention, it's kind of hard to dance in a costume. So be careful how you costume yourself if you want to dance. I remember I do a lot of country dancing and contra dancing and square dancing. And it's nice to dance in a costume. But I remember one young man came and joined the square there. And he was dressed as a bunch of grapes. which was a lovely costume, but you couldn't even reach him. He was just full of purple balloons. So it's always fun. It's always fun. That's a good thing to do. Nice to be silly every now and then. Well, we talked about Halloween today. And the end of the summer, we're kind of bringing the...
It's the end of the fall soon, right?
Yeah, end of the summer and end of the fall. And I've been doing garden chores because garden chores never really, really end. There's always something to do, but the main summer garden is done. About all I have left are some onions in storage, which are good. It's nice to have onions.
Was it garlic planting week this week?
Oh, and I want to mention garlic planting. This is the time of year to think about the here we go again kind of thing, because of all things, besides cover crops and things that people are thinking about now, garlic in this part of the country.
Garlic goes under the ground this time of year.
This time of year, because it can grow all winter. It kind of snuggles in and bides its time. I usually plant it around Halloween. That's a good time to do it. And you put it in a nice tilled bed, but I added a lot of nice compost to it, thanks to my chickens and thanks to my sheep. I have lots of nice compost.
So you just take a clove and stick it in the depth of your thumb.
Stick it in the depth of my thumb.
And wait, point down or point up?
Point up. So the little butt end of it is down. That's where the roots come out. If you happen to put it in sideways or upside down, when you harvest that garlic next year, you'll notice that the garlic has done all sorts of contortions to turn itself around. It'll be a little knot down there. It's still a head of garlic, but it had to work a lot harder than it wanted to.
And Lana, you planted 1,000 heads of garlic this week?
Oh, about this much, yes. I'm cutting back, Don. But I enjoy garlic. I enjoy all of the alliums.
Well, I enjoy your garlic,
yeah.
Too. So I'm...
I think the alliums are just the onion family. It's just such a nice thing. They seem to know what they're doing. They respond to the moon. They respond to the sun. I just kind of stand back and watch. I want to also mention leeks. Leeks this time of year, because that's of the allium family. Actually, I have some leeks still standing in the garden. They can stand a bit of frost, considering I've got some mulch around them. So I've been pulling them up, and leeks are good. I do like them. They take about the same amount of care as onions. You have to put them in, and I put them in as little plants, and
And there's lots of things you can do with leeks. They're, of course, great in soups. Mm-hmm. You can actually also roast them.
They're good.
Whole. I mean, you got to trim off the tough green things. And the trick with leeks is, of course, they always have dirt in them. So you have to, the traditional way of doing it is from the, you cut off the tough green part, and then you take your knife and you cut from the green part down almost to the, into the white part, and then in, so you put like an X in it. So it's like in four parts, and then you kind of have to peel back the outer leaves under running water, and then all of the dirt comes out.
Right. Sloshing it around as kind of a cut up, brushy looking thing.
Yeah, but you have to open it up.
You have to open it up. Yep.
The dirt is folded in there, basically.
It is, because as it grows, other
layers keep coming, yeah.
And it doesn't care if it's
but
dirty.
But it's not that much trouble, and it's well worth it. I think I was thinking I was going to make a cod chowder with leeks.
Good.
Like a, you know, like a New England creamy style.
Oh, and that's something I don't think of, is a fish-based soup, and that would be very mm-hmm. good. I have been making the traditional leek and potato soup, which mm-hmm. that's good, too. That it is.
So it's leek season right now.
Yeah. So three cheers for
And Lana Emily. Is not going to tell her leek joke this time.
No. Go find another
some of the older shows. Okay.
Other shows. Leek joke. No, because I just want to say that garlic is in the ground, ready to go again for next year. It's a hopeful time of year. Yes, it is. I hope for rain. We got a little sprinkle of rain on top of what I just planted.
Well, it was enough to take the dust from the corn harvest out of the air. Thank goodness.
It was getting
a little thick around here.
It has been dusty here in around Ames. And no, in this case, it really is not so much the dirt coming up as they're harvesting soybeans and corn, which means
acres and acres, acres and millions of acres. And it's... Oh,
well,
it's quite a spectacle, actually, if you pull off the road and watch a little bit how they do it.
Big Star Wars kind of equipment. So in future Donalana Kitchen shows, we're kind of going to keep exploring our food system, including farming methods here that get us the food that we all enjoy. So think about those tractors in the field. Yes, and think about dancing in the streets sometime, too. Do that any time of year.
And make your Halloween candies.
Yes. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We had a music today by the Barn Owl Band. Support this fine radio station, KHOI Community Radio. It's a trick or treat for your ears.
Or you can listen to the Donalana Kitchen on a podcast. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, just poke in Donalana, which is one word, and kitchen is the second word, and you will hear us on that format.
If you just can't get enough of us, there we are. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintos.
We had fine engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.